Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome to Indoctrination, a weekly conversation series about protecting yourself from systems of control. I'm your host, Rachel Bernstein.
Are you looking to find a safe and trustworthy therapist? Don't miss my latest video lecture, Seeking Safe Therapy, where I share guidance for anyone navigating the world of mental health care. As a licensed marriage and family therapist with extensive experience, I will equip you with practical tools to evaluate potential therapists, recognize red flags, and ensure you're receiving legitimate, ethical care. This comprehensive guide is, I think, especially valuable for those who've left high-control groups, but the insights are invaluable for anyone seeking mental health support. Learn how to protect yourself while seeking help. It's so important. Understand what makes therapy truly safe and effective, and gain your confidence in ability to choose the right mental health professional for your needs. Know what questions to ask and what to look for. This lecture and many more are available for purchase on my website, rachelbernsteintherapy.com. Just follow the link in the description of this episode to view and purchase all of the available lecture videos. Take good care. Hello, everyone. Today on the show, we have Haley Krischer. Haley is the author of the adult novel, Where Are You, Echo Blue? And the YA novel, Something Happened to Allie Greenleaf, The Falling Girls, and You Belong to Me, which came out in April 2025. Haley is an award-winning journalist who has written for The New York Times, The Atlantic, Elle, and more. She has an MFA from Lesley University, and Haley lives in New Jersey with her family. She's going to be talking to us today about the wellness industry. And in the show notes, there will be a link to the show that I was on called Unwell on Netflix. It was a documentary in 2020 talking about how getting involved in the wellness community can make you unwell. And why and how. And here is Haley now. I am so excited to have Haley Krischer on with us today to talk about a very important subject that has not been talked about enough. And I'm so glad to have you on. Please take a moment and introduce yourself, and then we'll start schmoozing. Go for it.
Hi, I'm Haley Krischer, and thank you so much for having me. I'm a journalist. I've been a journalist for over 20 years. This is my third YA book. I've written four books, one this last summer that was an adult book. I always write about women and girls because I'm just fascinated by sort of women's and their relationships with each other, whether it's romantic or not. In fact, most of the time I write about platonic relationships and dive deep into how people influence each other. And so with this book, You Belong to Me, it's about a high school girl who really doesn't feel like she fits in. She doesn't have great skin. She dresses all in black. Her mom is a teacher at this very elite school. And the only reason why she's able to go there is because her mother's the teacher, so she could go there for free. So she has a group of really wonderful friends who are very smart. They're all these goth, bookish kids, but she still even feels like an outsider with them because they're all super wealthy and she's not. And so when she starts to develop a relationship with a girl named Julia, she's the daughter of a local wellness guru. And the company, the wellness company, is called Deep. And they use a lot of cult-like tactics. They love bomb her with tons of compliments. They want her to work there. They start taking pictures of her and putting her online. And suddenly they start to tear her down. They isolate her from her family, like very typical cult-like activity or behavior. Soon enough, some really bad things happen. And she asks herself, wait a second, am I in a cult?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I definitely want to talk about the really bad things that happened, but I think it's great that you're writing about this. There's so much to it. I think about growing up going to small Jewish day schools, actually very little schools. And then I was suddenly at a middle school and high school that was for people of very different echelon than my home. The scholarship kids, I was in that group, were talked about that way. And it's interesting. Then I was a school counselor for a while at a school very similar to a school like that. And what I noticed was some of the parents were still worried when they were getting together with some of the other parents for a luncheon or something. They were sure that they shouldn't sit at the cool parents' table. That continued on into adults' 30s and 40s, 50s. Like, oh, those are the ones who really are wealthy, or those are the ones who are really involved in the school, or their names are on the sides of the building. So I'm going to sit over here by myself. And I thought, those kinds of imprints stick. Like, do I belong? Do I not belong? And why does someone want to have me in a group? And one other little private story, because I'm just remembering this now. When I just didn't feel like I fit in, because I really didn't with the group of people who I thought you were supposed to fit in with, because I thought those were the cool kids. Turned out some of them were just not very nice. And so we found the nice people who are quirky and out there and kind of fun. We found each other. But I do remember one summer going away to a place I learned to be like very strong. I was doing work. I was on an archaeological dig. It was in Israel. And then picking potatoes and doing things totally different. But there was a strength in what we did and a communal sense. And I came back not caring in a lot of ways about the same sorts of things. And because I walked past the cool kids, not showing any interest, not having any look on my face, but really being disinterested, they were suddenly interested in me because they wanted to know who this person was who was acting too cool to care. But I wasn't acting. I really had no interest. But now they're coming up to me.
Because you had like a certain amount of confidence at that point where you were feeling like confident in your own skin and you didn't need them anymore.
I didn't need them. And then they're like tapping on my shoulder. Hey, what's your name? I thought, we've been in school for 3 effing years. So if you don't know it yet, that's on you. It's really interesting, the dynamics and how they continue sometimes permeating our lives forever. It's a really important issue to delve into. Fascinating.
There's a lot of levels in my book that I really wanted to discuss. And I'm always fascinated by the whole outsider theme. And I think probably all of my characters in all of my books are outsiders in a certain way and are trying to, I guess, fix it the wrong way, fix that uncomfortable feeling that they feel. And I think it's a very common feeling, especially among teenagers. And so I think once I already had this idea of I want to write about this wellness world and I want to write about the celebrity wellness world, especially how can I sort of frame this outsider feeling and this world that we see that looks so beautiful on Instagram. And for kids, this is what they're constantly bombarded by. They're just always looking at all of these images that are just these perfect images. We know that they're not. They're Photoshopped, that they're faked, and some are AI at this point. But even as adults, it's a very hard thing for us to sort of parse that out and understand that. So how hard can it be for teenagers? So much more challenging.
So much more. Yes. I was thinking about this the other day too. And I'm sure it's not just because of living here in LA. I'm sure it happens in other places too. But I think about the greeting. Hi, good to see you. You look great. You've lost weight. I mean, how many times am I told that? And I think, what? if this is like a Weight Watcher meeting, then that's appropriate, but that's the only place. And if it's actually true that I've lost weight, every time you've seen me, I'd weigh nothing at this point. Like, why is it also that you think that's the greeting I want to hear? Or, oh, you have beautiful skin. How about asking about how I am? Or how's your mom? Or whatever, your job, your podcast. But just there's something about your looks that is your calling card. And for so many people, that's the focus. And I think the wellness industry sort of taps into so much that is on people's minds, but that also keeps being made to be on people's minds just by the way people are socialized and what they notice and what they talk about.
Yeah, because wellness is not about having skin that has acne. When I say wellness, I mean quote unquote wellness. People who can't see what I'm doing, wellness is not about being overweight. What is even wellness? If everything is wellness, then what is wellness? It's more of like an aspiration than anything else of some sort of weird perfection that is not realistic. I think wellness really started in a really good place because people wanted to be healthier, and that makes complete sense. And I think it's a hard thing, just going back to what you were talking about. Oh, you look so great. You lost weight. I have a friend recently who lost a lot of weight, and she told me about it, and it was not through Ozempic. She worked really hard. She worked really hard in her diet. She's been just wanting to be a lot healthier. I said to her, I don't want to say to you, you look great because you lost weight. Every time I've seen you before this, you still looked great, but you look healthy. And if you're happy, then as your friend, I'm happy. That's a lot to say. That's a lot to say to somebody. But it comes with all these layers of beauty and wellness. And what did those things mean? And how are we critical of ourselves? And how are we judgmental of other people?
Absolutely right. And the choices that they make, whether it's through Ozempic or anything else, it's whatever they think works for them and whatever's going to help them get from point A to point B. As long as the point B is something you're choosing and it's not because you've been pressured into it or because the multi-level marketing something that someone got you into or sold you products from got you into it. I think it taps into so much pseudoscience too, which we have talked about on this podcast, just this whole idea of pseudoscience. Just like wellness has air quotes, I think pseudoscience shouldn't even have the word science in it. There is a lot of overlap there with a lot of magical cures and magical thinking that gives people false hope, but that makes the people selling them these things involved in the grift, involved in it really not being honest. I don't know if that's something that you've noticed.
Yeah, I mean, I actually know somebody who just sort of went into one of these companies and they wanted me to buy some products, but I had to sign up for a whole thing first. And I said, I'm really sorry. I just don't feel comfortable with that. And that was it. I couldn't really say anymore. The word wellness was all over it. And I couldn't really understand what the story was with this, but it's very difficult when you have a friend who is doing something like that because you want to be able to support them, but you don't want to say, this is a cult. I think this is a cult. What are you doing? So I did say, are there any lawsuits against this company? I'm curious. And she said, no, of course not. And then she said, well, wait, are there? And I said, I don't know. That's something I'm asking you. But it was weird. It was weird. It was weird for me as her friend, and especially because knowing that I'm writing all about, my book is about this wellness industry and how so much of the marketing preys on teenagers and adults. And so I'm in this very, very strange position to be in. And look, it's entirely possible that the company that they're working for, that it is not a cult and is on the level, but I'm just too skeptical at this point. I'm just entirely too skeptical because I've just done entirely too much research and listened to too many podcasts like yours. And I hope I know better.
Haley, I was going to say, you and me both, do people want to keep inviting us to the parties? Because then they're going to talk about this thing. And then suddenly you see this glazed look coming over their eye because they remember who they're talking to. I'm like, oh, never mind. Yeah, I went to Peru. I took ayahuasca with this guy who's a shaman. His real name is Greg. He's from Santa Monica. But okay, no, stop that. people can do what they want to do.
They can. And maybe it's great. I think the reality is that also these people are adults. You as an adult, you have to do your own research and feel like you're making your own choices. And the issue is teenagers. And at least in my book, You Belong to Me, I really focus on the teenagers who are not just victimizers, but they're victims too. And so that is really something that I wanted to explore, especially because I think probably my first interest in this area was when it came to the Manson sisters, because they were so young when they committed those murders and they were sexually assaulted by him, by Charles Manson. They were given drugs by Charles Manson. They were, thought control was used on them and manipulation. And I'm not saying that every single person that that happens to is going to end up to be such a brutal killer like they were. I mean, what they did obviously was horrific. But I do also see them as victims. And so some of the girls in the cult in my book, that is the idea that they're all sort of working together, that they're all hanging on to each other, that they have each other as a family, even though they start doing these horrible things. I really see them as victims as well.
It's interesting. The Manson woman was a girl at the time who's still in jail and has been for decades and decades.
Leslie Van Houten, are you talking about?
Yeah.
And didn't she just get out of jail?
She just got out. Over the years, I wrote letters on her behalf. I don't know if she even knows or if she even got them or anyone got them, but it was the same thing. Like, they were victims. Yes, they did things they shouldn't have done. And she paid for it dearly. She had her whole life in jail because of it. And there's so many cult leaders out there who never spend a day in jail. They never even deal with getting fined. I mean, they just get away with it. And so I remember really feeling for her. And there are people who I've met. My first session with them was in jail, and they look like a fish out of water. Like, I don't even know how I got here. Like, you could see the hypnosis was starting to wear off and they don't even quite know what happened. And so it's really disorienting for so many people, especially when you're young and your brain is still developing. But it's interesting that you had that same kind of feeling of these are people who are caught up in a web that they didn't at all know could happen, I think, to them. You would mention also in the book about things that the person, the girl in the book, started noticing. Don't mean to call her a girl, but I don't know her age at the time that
yeah,
she started.
Yeah, Frances Bean. She's a young woman. She's 16 years old.
Okay, so what did she start noticing that was making her concerned?
Well, someone died. So that was a big thing. But I think it started happening before that. She knew that her mother started talking about some red flags that had to do with the wellness company. There were lawsuits against the wellness company. There was an actual story that I used that had to do with a celebrity wellness company that I'm not going to mention their name, but they did promote a product, something about putting bees around your face and getting bees to sting your face to increase the collagen in your face. And someone actually did die. So her mother starts bringing up this and also bringing up other things to her about the costs and how drugstore products are fine. And, you know, her friends also start asking her questions like, if you like these people and you're like a goth kid, why are they making you wear white? Why does everyone have to wear white in this company? And what's that about? And she just thinks, okay. And she asks that to Julia, who's the daughter of the wellness guru. Why are we wearing white? What is this about? And Julia just says to her, well, my mother loves the purity and the look of white, of everything white. Their whole house is white and they have this beautiful spa in her basement and that's all white. And so she loves the ethereal feeling of all of this. And so anytime Frances Bean asks a question, there's always a response back. The woman who did the bee sting facelift or whatever and who died from it, she didn't do it the right way. Or wearing white is just an aesthetic look that she prefers. It has nothing to do with because she wants everybody to look exactly the same. Then there's some older men who start showing up at some of these. They have these really big parties. All the girls are there who work for them and they're given flowers and they're listening to these really beautiful inspirational talks. and they're making this beautiful community together. And it might be perfectly fine if it just ended there. There's nothing wrong with community. There's nothing wrong with being spiritual, even wearing all white. If everybody's wearing the same color, okay, fine. There could be reasons around that. But these men start showing up. And so Francis Bean says, why are these men here? I don't understand. This is a girls' party. And so they tell her, oh, look, you have to remember that Deep is a company. It's a corporation. It needs money. And there are investors. And there are people who really think that this is a great thing. And so they want to be able to see what's happening with the girls and how inspired the girls are. And they want to be able to invest in it. So they sort of have to come for that reason. Of course, it's ridiculous. Only adults there are men, you know, older men. I would love to hear your thoughts about this because honestly, I think that good cult leaders and good manipulators and good narcissists, they could talk their way out of anything. They have the answer to everything.
Yeah, they do. Oh, and it's an immediate answer. And it could be a very different answer than they gave an hour ago, but you may have misheard it or you didn't understand that really they were talking in code before or whatever. There's some explanation for why they're suddenly saying something different. I have a thought about that that I can get into, but I'm also thinking about the color white. I think about how many people have been persuaded to follow someone who was wearing a white lab coat. Even in commercials for medicines and things, you can have an extra or an actor just be given a white lab coat. So it looks like a doctor is telling you something or a nurse is telling you something, and they're not. They're actors. It's important then that you notice that you see them in the salad dressing commercial next. They weren't really the doctor. We are persuaded by colors, by costume. We attribute a certain amount of purity to white, to honesty, then also to people who are wearing the costume of things that we give credibility to. And even if someone is a licensed doctor or nurse, it still doesn't mean that they're not going to try to sell you something, which is unfortunate because we've seen that too. What I've noticed, just to answer your question, and then I want to hear more about what you've uncovered in the wellness industry and more about your book, is that I haven't sort of put this out in a chart. I should probably do this. There are the overt steps of control and then the covert steps of control that happen simultaneously. So the manipulation, the love bombing, the this is special, this is the only place you can find this, we have the answer. And you've been specially chosen for this opportunity. Sometimes people, that really speaks to people, like we're lucky enough to find us or insightful enough to follow the lead towards us. But the covert control is if you disagree, you're going to be publicly shamed here. We're going to call you on the carpet in one way or another. And for a lot of people, that's their biggest fear, public shaming. And if you doubt it, it won't work. If you question it, the magic of it somehow won't work. Or your doubting mind is the thing that's gotten you into this situation where you haven't been open in the past and now you need to be open. And also people who are charmingly narcissistic also let on every once in a while about their undercurrent of anger. And you can find them to be charming, but also simultaneously intimidating. And so you don't want to say no to them. When you get glimpses of that, well, it's like people say, I didn't choose to stay, but I just kept hearing, this is another covert thing. I kept hearing about all the terrible things that happened to people who left or how they backslid back to the beginning and now they have to start all over again. And so all of that is teaching you to not question, to not doubt, to not speak up, and to not leave. And you just don't know that that's what you're also being taught all along the way. That really is like tying your hands behind your back tighter and tighter.
This is so fascinating that you're talking about this because there is an article that came out just in the New York Times just a few days ago. And it was about how the rise of the crunchy teen wellness influencer and that teenagers are now becoming wellness influencers. And they're basically saying the same things that you're talking about. It's this whole fear-based idea that if you don't listen to me and if you don't do the things that I'm telling you to do, that something really, really bad is going to happen to you. And it's such a scary idea because health is obviously important. And we can't sit here and say that it's not. Nobody wants their kids sitting there and eating Captain Crunch for breakfast or whatever, or Fruit Loops. But I think it's the idea that you have the answers to everything, that if you don't listen and don't follow the rules to what's happening, then you're not going to be accepted in this area that I'm talking about, that I have this platform. I'm in this raised position. I'm in this elevated position as a teenager on Instagram with a million followers just because I'm talking about food and how healthy this food is for you. And it becomes so bastardized, the message. I feel like the more cult documentaries I watched, the more I realized that these cult leaders, and even in my book, they make sense in the beginning. And they have to make sense in the beginning. Otherwise, who's going to follow them? There's a little bit of something that makes sense because you're like, oh, that's a very good point. That's when they start to manipulate it into this way that is horrific. In my book, You Belong to Me, Frances Bean, she starts getting very into this wellness company and they want to use her as a model. There's this one college-aged guy. His name is Kai, K-A-I. Kai starts working for this. He's a family friend and starts working for this company. He's the only guy who is man who's working for the company. He's a younger man. He's 23 years old. And all of the girls, the teenage girls who work for Deep, they all look up to him. And Julia, the daughter of the wellness guru, she really looks up to him. She sees him as a brother. And he's just this guy who really like can understand you, and he understands what you're going through, and he could really lead you in the right direction and make you feel confident. And there's nothing sexual. There's nothing about it that's dangerous. That's the premise. He's a healer. All the girls tell this to Frances Bean when she first gets into the company. Have you met Kai? He's a healer. He's so incredible. And they have brushes on him. And she sees this. She sees this. But it's not too unusual behavior. You see this older, handsome guy who has a lot of knowledge and you're like, oh, that's cool. I want to hear what he has to say. I want to see what he's doing. So Frances Bean starts really just getting involved with him. And he's like, I want you to wear this dress. We have these great new dresses. They're called nap dresses. And if you can't hear what I'm saying, it's nap, N-A-P, as in I'm going to take a nap. And the idea is we're going to take a nap in these beautiful white dresses. These nap dresses actually exist. They're sold online for like from $100 to like $400. And it was a big thing during the pandemic. I knew I had to sort of put this into my book somehow. And so Kai has been modeling in the dress and he really is putting her on this pedestal. It's like what you were talking about. He's telling her how wonderful she is. She's like, I don't really like pictures of myself. I feel really uncomfortable. And he's like, no. You look fantastic. You look amazing. Like you need to like put your feet on the ground. And he puts her outside and it's this very cold weather and the ground is really cold and he wants her to like experience what life really feels like. And she is just completely taken by him. Not romantically, she's gay. She's not into guys at all, but she's just taken by him as a leader and by somebody who can make her feel good and make her feel strong. I really wanted to sort of play with that and how real cult leaders prey on their victims. They make them feel good at first.
They make them feel really, really good. And I think for so many people, when I ask them about the reason that they stayed in something, even past the point of realizing that it was a fraud or it was like snake oil or whatever else, they would often say the community that they had made friends or who they thought were their friends, even though those friendships highly conditional, which you don't know at the time. And also the hope and this sunk cost fallacy, like I've already put in time, I've already put in money, I've already made the sacrifices. I can't stop now. It would be silly to stop now. But I think being specially chosen by this guy who is so charming or handsome or whatever else is intoxicating. It's absolutely intoxicating. And I think that's why so many cults, religious cults to all other kinds of cults, have their most either attractive or well-spoken people doing their recruiting and being the one on the college campus, being the one who are trying to get people in because they know it works. And it's unfortunate how well it works. And then people don't want to give up the chance to feel special, to feel like you're having a chance here that you haven't had before in life and you might not have again.
Right. Which is why this whole MAHA thing is so huge right now, the Make America Healthy Again, because RFK Jr.'s, he has answers. He has solutions that if we just get rid of all the fluoride in the water and everyone's going to be, you won't be poisoned anymore. Won't that be wonderful? I mean, he doesn't talk about how kids' teeth were falling out, literally falling out. And how one town in Colorado, there was a big article that I just read recently, they got rid of the fluoride in the water and now they want it back. Because they're like, oh, everyone started getting cavities by the tenfold. Now they're trying to figure out how to get the fluoride back in the water, which to me is just absolutely crazy. I'm sure there are risks involved in anything that we do in life, but sometimes the outcome outweighs it. And so I think this is like a perfect indoctrination story for someone like him. He's got all the answers.
And the measles outbreaks and how destructive that is. But also, I don't know if people have had measles. They haven't had a chance to have it because they've a lot of times have been vaccinated. It's extremely dangerous and extremely unpleasant and painful and horrible.
I mean, measles was gone. It was gone. Why do we want it back?
Why do we want it back?
Why do we want that back?
Right. And I think that for some people, they really do believe. They really do believe that vaccinations cause autism. They really do believe these things. And they really are trying to do good things. They're fighting what they think is the good fight. And there isn't science to back it up, or it's science in a vacuum, quote unquote science, from the articles they get, the people they follow, the influencers, the people who know very little about very little, but know how to be backlit. So they look like they know something. In terms of the book, now I'm kind of curious. Of course, you don't have to give away everything because I want people to buy it. But what is another lesson from it before we talk more, just we expand the talk to talk more about the wellness industry? What's another lesson from the book?
There's a scene that probably stands out to me as one of the most important scenes. And it's a real turning point for Frances Bean when she has to really look deep inside of herself and ask herself what is happening to her. And there's a moment, I actually was inspired by a podcast about the vow. I am trying to remember the name of the podcast. I'm sorry, but I could tell you afterwards. You could put it in the show notes. It was a journalist. She used the tapes of Allison Mack talking to Keith Raniere. And he said to her, he asked her specific questions about ideas about how they were going to start branding these women. Because he obviously didn't want to say it specifically. He wanted her to say it. And she said, well, this is what I think. And he said, well, there you go. You sound just like a narcissist, don't you? You're always using the word I. And she said, well, you asked me what I think. And he said, well, you could be on the narcissist commercial or something like that. I used that whole transaction between the two of them in that conversation in my book because I thought it was so important to really show how easily you can be manipulated and how the thought control and how someone could turn that around on you, your own words on you. And so something happens with Frances Bean where she has to show her loyalty. Obviously, as you know, that's a huge thing in a cult. You have to show your loyalty because then you don't belong here. And so she starts thinking of certain ideas and ways that she could show her loyalty. And of course, that is going to be going against somebody like a friend of hers, which is what he wants. But as she starts saying, well, these are my thoughts. This is what I think. He starts saying to her, oh, look at you. You're a narcissist. You should really start thinking about the way that you act and the reason you act like this, because clearly all you do is think about yourself when you should be thinking about the group. And it's straight out of the playbook of Keith Raniere. I mean, I might be an okay writer, but I could never make something like that up because it's so devious and it is just so horrific to use somebody else's words against them in that way and then make them doubt themselves to such a degree that they say, okay, I don't want to be a narcissist. What does that mean to be a narcissist? I'm not a selfish person. I'm here for the group. I'm here for you. I've shown my dedication. I've shown my dedication to you. So what is it that I have to do to show you that I'm here for all of you? Because I don't want to be thrown out of the group. So that's what she does. She does something that's against one of her friends, a really horrible thing against one of her best friends. And they're happy with it. The group is happy with it because that's what they want. They want to see her be completely separated from those friends who are giving her other information. What they don't realize, and this doesn't really give away a complete spoiler, but what they don't realize is that her friends are actually loyal to her. And they don't realize the level of loyalty that her friends are to her and how they see what's happening to Frances Bean and how they are terrified. And all they want to do is help get her out of this situation. Kai and the rest of the wellness group, they underestimate that.
Wow. Wow, that is incredible. It is so amazing to hear about these kinds of stories that are so much about the interplay between people and the pressure and being put on the spot, not knowing really how to respond. So I think a lot of times people in retrospect say, I wish I could have said something different, or I wish I could have stood up in that moment, but I just felt like I couldn't. Or a lot of people also feel like they're the only one. They're the only one, if they were to speak up or disagree, they're the only one who feels that way because everyone else is remaining silent. And that is never the case. Usually it's at least more than 50% of the people in that space or who are following or who are in that lecture hall or that weekend away who are doubting, who are wondering. They just don't want to be the only voice or the first voice, which is interesting. Group leaders take advantage of that very seriously. They know that they can get people to remain silent because of the social psychology involved, the social pressure. It's really sad, really sad.
Yeah, you must see a lot of that because any cult documentary I look at and any book I read about cults, for instance, The Girls by Emma Klein. Did you read that?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought she did such an incredible job in showing how the girl was slowly manipulated into this world and how badly she wanted to be part of it. Even when people were saying to her, you don't have to do this. It was the only place that she really felt accepted or not judged.
Or not judged. Right, exactly. For people who are really thirsty for affirmation, for whatever reason or reasons, either because that's what they needed when they were growing up or within the context of this group, they have disconnected you from the other people in your world who could offer you that. So you really need it from these people in this space only, because these are the only people you have. You see how much someone is either hugged or smiled at, complimented, affirmed for being a trusting, for being a good, whatever it is, for being loyal. The word loyal always brings the hairs up, makes me nervous. But you hear it a lot now. You hear it a lot now in government about loyalty, which, I have to shake it off.
With the malignant narcissist in charge of our country. Yeah.
So there's that. And I think that there is something really interesting about how people will do what they feel like they need to do to get the, oh, I'm so proud of you. Or I know that was hard. That took a lot of courage, but you really did it. People start to think, I spent a lot of time trying to prove myself to this person or in this space, but for what? Just because I felt like I needed to, or this was the last person in my life who could offer me this. It's very hard when people step back and look at all of that, all of the effort that they made to prove something to someone who didn't deserve it.
Well, it sounds like an abusive relationship too. It is an abusive relationship, I guess. But when I was younger, I was in an abusive relationship. And I remember saying to myself and to the person, I'm a strong person. You're not going to railroad me. You're not going to do this to me. Yet that's exactly what was happening. Like you just said, you have to prove yourself, or you feel like you have to prove yourself. And that's how I felt. I was in my 20s. I thought I had to prove myself to this person that I wasn't going to let them take advantage of me, or that I wasn't going to let them get in my head. And they absolutely did. And it took a while. It was really hard to untangle from that because of how much their voice was still left in my head, even though people around me were saying, this is not healthy, this is not okay, this is unacceptable behavior. And I'm not talking about physical abuse. I'm talking about emotional abuse and manipulation. And now my therapist, she says things to me. If I start doing some old self-talk to myself, they'll say, that's not accurate. That's not accurate.
That's really good.
Kind of a through line that I like to say to myself. And I think that you have to. Everyone has to have that self-talk because we all can question ourselves unnecessarily.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The idea is like, well, what's accurate and what's not?
And the fact that also you were willing to sort of take things on to see, oh, well, is this a failing of mine or did I misstep in some way? I mean, just shows about your conscience that you want to do the right thing and you want to be trustworthy and honest. Also, when people say, I had no idea what kind of sociopathy I was dealing with, and then they feel foolish that they didn't know, I think, no, no, honey, that's a compliment. That means you don't have the same wiring. It is so foreign to you to imagine that someone could do that to someone else and not care and be so orchestrated in it. I'm glad it's foreign to you. That's a good thing. But now that you know that they exist, now you want to learn what to watch out for.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And thank you for saying that, because that is so true. At that time, at that age in my life, at that stage, I couldn't have known the level of manipulation that I was dealing with. I hadn't seen it before. And it's not like I had some perfect childhood, but I had never seen anything like that before, especially when you start with the love bombing. And that's what I really wanted to write about in my book, how love bombing, people can love you, and they could show you lots of affection. And when you're getting to the point of being so put on a pedestal, and that's the beginning of a relationship. So it's very hard to like parse out what's real and what's not, because you don't want to then get into a relationship and say to yourself, oh, this person is lying to me, or I don't believe everything that this person is saying. But I guess there's probably internal signals that go off in your head, like, you're not used to listening to them, but I think you have to.
I think you do have to. And it's good to learn, especially if you follow by a certain code in your life where you're trustworthy, then you're honest and you don't want to disappoint people and you don't want to hurt people, that I've talked about on the show before, that we assume that what's true for us is true for other people. And when we suddenly get introduced to this idea that not everyone operates with the same level of self-expectation and standard, it can be shocking and a little depressing, or sometimes a lot depressing. I'm curious about the love bombing. We can talk about that. And the love bombing, even tying it in with the wellness industry, just how you're going to feel, how you're using the idea of love. You'll be loved more if you look a certain way or buy this product. I'm just wondering about the crossover with love bombing and this wellness industry that, for this show, it has permanent air quotes, whether people can see them or not. So what have you noticed about this sort of selling love?
Oh my God, that's such a good point. That is what you see all the time, is that I want to love myself. I want to feel good about myself. And I want you to feel good about yourself. And there's also like a certain kind of voice that a lot of these people have where they're like, I want you to feel really good. And this is like really important to me. I'm not trying to make fun of how people speak, but there's an affected voice that comes along with a lot of these people that doesn't feel real and doesn't feel like that's actually how they speak. They want to seem really calm. They want to seem like they have all of the answers. There's one person who I saw on the Instagram account. It's called I Am Mallory. And it's this woman, Mallory, who just blows up a lot of these wellness cults, wellness people who are doing funky things. There's a person who she was showing who was doing a cleanse with her whole family. Now her kids, literally like a fasting cleanse with her family. Her kids are like 5 years old, 7 years old, and they're not eating and they're just drinking juices. And you just want to say, come on. But she loves her kids And because she loves her kids so much, this is what she wants to do, the best thing that she can for her family. And there's so much talking about that and saying that over and over again that you question, well, what is really happening here? What happens is there's this idea, of course, of self-love that is extremely important. And I think what happens is the message of that becomes really bastardized and broken down by a lot of these people who are selling products online, because they want you to think, and maybe they truly think, that they're there for you, that they're the only person who knows what's really good for you, because this is what they were able to do for themselves. And there's so much constant, I know, and there's a certain way of talking. Like I was saying before, it's a very personable way of talking, and I don't entirely object to it, but I think that it can really come across as love bombing, because you're constantly over and over again telling people how much you love them, how much you want to help them, how much you know that they've been in your situation, they've been in your shoes. It's a sales tactic. How could it not be?
Absolutely. What becomes important for a lot of people is trying to figure out how to decipher what is real and what's safe and what's not. And it's hard with the wellness industry because there are so many people touting something that is the newest thing, and then it catches on like wildfire. And then you think, well, I heard 10 different people talking about it, so it must be valid. But none of that matters. And so I just wonder how people can discern what's real from what's not.
There are certain words that you really have to look out for, like toxic and biohack and detox, because these are unregulated words. These are words that can be just slapped on literally anything and it means absolutely nothing. And clean beauty, that's another thing. The beauty industry is dying to get into the wellness industry because they see how enormous the wellness industry is. The wellness industry is a $6.3 trillion industry, and it's going to go up to probably about $9.8 trillion by 2028. The beauty industry is just like, how do we get in here? And they're doing a good job getting their way in there. We're using all organic ingredients. How can preservatives be organic? There's certain chemicals. I'm not extremely knowledgeable about this, so I don't want to pretend to be. Someone might say, oh, you could use citric acid as a preservative, citrus somehow. But from everything that I've known for all the years that I've been around the wellness industry, there are certain chemicals that have to be used. And so maybe some of the lavender that's in the product is organic. Maybe that lavender is clean. But what about the rest of the ingredients? They're not necessarily bad for you. That's the truth. Not everything that's natural is good for you. It's very hard to parse out. We're just as vulnerable as teenagers are. I'm the first person to admit that I'm on TikTok in the middle of the night if I can't sleep. And all of a sudden there's this drink that has acidophilus in it and probiotics. And it's going to be great for my stomach and make me less bloated. I won't have any acid flare-ups or anything like that. And I'm like, click, I'm buying that. I'm the first to do that. But at least I could say, okay, they got me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
They got me. Okay. It's still sitting in my fridge. I haven't even opened it. But it was one of those things that in the middle of the night, my stomach must have been bothering me or something. And somehow my phone knew about it. You know, I might have said something out loud. Oh, my stomach hurts. And then my phone said, oh, well, guess what? We have this for you. And so it's so mixed in with money and cults of personality. And it's really hard to parse out. I think you have to also be sort of forgiving of yourself. These things are constantly around us, nonstop. We're being bombarded by these products online and our kids are being bombarded by these products. How do we not fall for many of them? How do we not? Of course we do.
Every once in a while, I'll talk to someone who will say, you know, oh, I got involved in something and it was amazing. And they taught me how to do this. They acted this way. They did this. And I learned how to do this. So many of the words are not able to be defined. They're not tangible at all. It's like, I found enlightenment. I sometimes will joke about that, which I shouldn't make light of it because people spend a lifetime and sometimes their life savings and all of that going towards this goal. But if it were something obvious where like you had a crown that grew out of your head where you were like, oh, now you reached it. When you are given all of these goals, but they can't really be seen by anyone except for the person in charge because there are these invisible things and they're ill-defined, you wait for someone to tell you if you've reached it. But if it's a business, it doesn't work for them to have you reach it or to have you reach it anytime soon. There are a lot of, oh gosh, there are so many people now who I hear culty language being used in the wellness industry where people are going towards cures or psychic cures or something that exists in, these are words that I heard yesterday from different people, that it helps you live in 5D. Okay. I said, what is that? And they said, that's where you want to live. Because they were given the answer. They were giving me the answer they were given. Okay. And then also now there are people who call themselves quantum healers and quantum psychics, because quantum physics, quantum mechanics, this is sort of this new burgeoning field that has to do with computers. But people are just grabbing words from other places, or that this will heal you on a cellular level. So people say that a lot. What does that mean? And maybe it does, but maybe it doesn't, but it sounds good. I also remember one time taking a class in media, noticing how much we are guided by words that are used, even the photos that are used. And I noticed when you buy certain products and they have a before and after picture, that if the before picture has poor lighting, lighting is coming from a place where the person has wrinkles or whatever, and then suddenly the lighting is great in the after picture, it just means the only thing that changed was the lighting. Or that they are looking upset in the first picture, but they're smiling in the second picture. So they look happier. And that's also the only thing that's changed. The shape of where their mouth is configured has changed, but nothing else has changed. To notice those things, to be kind of a smart consumer. But I have to admit too, I've been sold on a lot of things. We all are.
Yeah, I think it's really hard. And I think that that's the key, is that you have to be able to look at who's selling you the product. And look, if you want to be scammed, everybody wants a miracle product. It's understandable. For instance, especially, I think I have such an issue with the celebrity wellness companies, because I think that they just have this built-in cult leader presence where you already trust them because they've been in a movie theater, they've been in your house, you feel comfortable with them and you think, oh, they have great hair. I love that hair product. I'm going to use that. And maybe that's fine. You don't have a stylist who's fixing their hair 24/7 and touching it up every time they move in a camera. The product might be fine. And maybe they do really use the product. There is one celebrity wellness company that I definitely take issue with. And I'll just say that it rhymes with the name Poop. And that celebrity wellness company can be, especially used to be, very dangerous. And they're very transparent about not really giving a shit about anything. In a 2018 article in the New York Times Magazine by Taffy Brodesser-Ackner, where she reported that the company, this celebrity wellness company, was supposed to do a big deal with Vogue. And they were going to maybe like have their own spinoff of a wellness magazine or a wellness newsletter, something along these lines. And when Vogue said, okay, great, it's all done, we're going to do this, it's going to be fabulous, but we have one stipulation, and that is that you have to be fact-checked. And the celebrity wellness company said, oh yeah, no, sorry, not interested, because we don't do fact-checking around here. That's in the New York Times Magazine. That is not some made-up story. This is like a real thing, that this company does not want to be fact-checked. And that's just how they operate. If you're talking about this very public figure and this very public company that actually is a profitable company, and that's how they operate, then you have to think about how every other smaller business that wants to be like them operate. It's like the abusive person, how they act on the outside. And if they're being horrible on the outside, what must they act like on the inside of the house? You know, it's sort of the same thing. Because if they're like, oh yeah, no, we don't do fact checking. I mean, look, they might say, okay, look, some Eastern medicine, you can't fact check. And that is part of the wellness industry. There is an element of that. But when you are a public company and when you're a company that is riding on the backs of a reputation of somebody who is like a huge celebrity in this, not just this country, in the world, there should be standards that are upheld. And there's just not. There's just not.
Yeah. And the standards, people will sometimes contact me and they'll say, I really need someone who can do EMDR. And I think that has a lot of validity to it, but I think you also need to have training. And yeah, I went to a workshop, but I'm not going to call myself an EMDR practitioner and be able to kind of look at myself in the mirror, knowing that I could be putting people in harm's way. But there are a lot of people who don't worry about that. And what they have built into it is exactly as you were saying, well, if it doesn't work, you weren't doing it right. And so there's this out that people build in for themselves as opposed to trying to make sure that they're being, I think, professional and safe. They're in it for, I think, the easy buck. Or some people just want to be able to be helpful and they rush into saying that they can do things that they really don't know about. I'm wondering, I know that you care about this issue because I can tell there's a part of it that really makes you angry, really frustrated on behalf of people. And I'm just wondering about that, about the dangers of this, either the long-term impact or what have you seen happening here that people really, really need to know about? And yes, there are people, celebrities who are pushing so many products and are doing very well because of their celebrity, not because of the product.
I worked at a health food store, two different health food stores when I was in my early 20s. One of them was filled with a lot of hypocrites. And the other one was filled with a lot of people who really believed in products and wanted products to work and feel better. And there was a lot of talk about apple cider vinegar and how it will cure fever if you soak your feet in it. And they really believed what they were saying. And I guess I just worked at this company for 2 years and I was a buyer in the beauty section of this company. So I went to trade events and saw, this is in the mid-90s. This was like a burgeoning industry at that point. Whole Foods wasn't on every corner and it was close to exploding, but it had a number of years to go. And I guess I just saw, and it really stuck with me, the desperation that people had to feel better. The true, real desperation of feeling better and wanting so badly to feel better. And I get it because I feel the same way. And I think that I do get angry when I see people being just terribly taken advantage of, because I think that you do have to have an open mind when you're going into wellness. There's so much holistic stuff that is unproven and can really, really work. Reiki, for instance, it's completely unproven. If you look it up and look up studies about Reiki, you are not going to find anything that is hard. There's not any hard evidence that Reiki is going to work. But I've been going through a very stressful time in my life this past year. And for the past 6 months, I started working with a Reiki master. Once a month, I go to her. And the way that she explained it to me was that I am just meditating. She is helping me meditate and get to that place. Is she healing me? You know, Reiki is the idea of that you're doing like no touch healing. But it's not like some magic thing where she's all of a sudden like running her hands across the area where my back is, and then my back feels great, or my head. It's not like that. It's not a magic pill. But I have found that it allows me to be in a peaceful place, and that when I am meditating, I can sort of drop into it faster because I'm having this hour-long practice where I'm with her. But like I said, you're not going to be able to find any real studies on that, and I've looked. Does Reiki actually work? No one really knows. If it works for you, if you have the money to do it, great. She's not out there trying to sell this to millions of people. She has a very small business, my Reiki practitioner. Could somebody laugh at me if they say that I think that this works? But I'm just saying I think it works for me. I'm not out here saying, you should do this, you should do this. I think it works for me. And the Reiki practitioner I'm working with, she's also saying, let's do this as long as it works for you. There's no love bombing. There's no manipulative stuff. There's no, I'm the only person that you can do this with. There's very much a push of independence and feeling. Do you want to make another appointment? No, you should make another appointment. And there's a big difference there.
I'm glad that you're pointing out that distinction, because it could be that it's the practice. It could be that your presence there with her presence there, or just having the time to be still, is what makes a difference. I wonder sometimes if what I say is helpful to my clients, or just the fact that they made an appointment and kept it, and that they then feel good about themselves, that they're moving forward in their lives and making those decisions. Who knows what it is, or a combination of different things. But I think it is good that she doesn't approach it like it is this magic bullet and that you have to come back in order for it to work. I think that's really responsible.
There's a lot that she's mostly just pushing for me to do on my own, for myself. There's a really big difference between that and the bad actors in the wellness world. And I think that that's what people have to sort of look out for. And in my book, Frances Bean is told over and over again that she can't do any of this without the wellness company that she works for. She has to do it with them, and that's it. You're not going to have the beautiful skin. You're not going to feel good. You're not going to feel like you belong. You're not going to get away from the past trauma from your father, which is something we didn't even touch on. But you're going to have a lot of problems if you're not with us. But you're allowed to leave. But you're allowed to leave anytime you want. But you're going to be a disaster when you leave. But good luck.
Good luck. Yeah, we'll make you dependent, but go ahead and do your own thing. Yeah. But I think also when you're just mentioning just briefly about her father, and we might not have time to get into that, but then people can buy the book and find out more about that story. I think that there is something true for a lot of people where they come into these spaces injured and they really are looking for healing. That's why I think that word is something that really speaks to people, because while they might be going after some sort of physical healing, some of them are going after emotional healing and they think it might come in the same form and might not. And just because you have your finger on the pulse of what's happening with this industry, are there other trends that you're noticing that we need to watch out for? Yes, with the celebrity, with the, you know, I just got my braces off, but I'm an expert influencers. So what other things are you noticing that are kind of growing or that are disturbing out there?
Well, I think the conspiracy theories are probably the things that scare me the most, because I think being online, it's just very easy to believe whatever you see. I always just say this to my kids, what are your sources? As a journalist, that's just my first instinct. What are your sources? Not everything has to be from the New York Times, but what are your sources? Was this a study? How big was the study? How many people were in the study? Where was the study held? Did the company pay for the study? I mean, these are easy questions that you can kind of ask yourself so that you don't start getting into these bizarre conspiracy theories about so many bad things that could potentially be happening to us. I think that there's just a tornado of negativity that happens on the internet, and it's so easy to get sucked into it because it's a whirlwind and there's just so much information. You have to be able to question, and you also have to be able to believe science as well. It's very easy to get caught up in a lot of things that people are saying and not ask yourself what's really behind this.
I like that. I like look into the sources, find out who said this and why, and what study it was from, who funded the study, all of it. It's all really good to figure out. With the conspiracy theories, that's a really interesting angle here, because it does really tap into people's fears. And I think it taps into people's sense of urgency. And so they make a decision right away to buy something, because they think something horrendous could happen at any moment. Have you noticed that too?
Yeah, I really have. I've noticed it myself. I don't think any of us are completely immune to that kind of thing. But yeah, I think that the fear factor is such an enormous part of our lives and has been in the past since probably 15 years. I mean, conspiracy theories have always been around, but in the past 15 years, they've just grown exponentially online, and there's so many lies and false information and more things that you can be afraid of. And who knows, maybe that's why the wellness industry continues to keep growing at these crazy speeds. Fear is just such a huge piece of this. I don't even think we can really determine how much fear is a part of so much of this. It's so huge because it's always constantly over our heads. You're getting sick. You're getting poisoned. Again, just back to RFK, I'm going to cure autism by the fall, October. Okay. So we should all be terrified that this is something that he is going to cure, or that even in a lot of cases should be cured. I'm sure that there's lots of people out there who are like, I'm autistic. Don't start curing me. I'm fine with the different way that I look at the world. I mean, obviously, that's not the case for everybody, but fear is just such a huge piece.
You're right. There is this assumption that things need to be cured and that there's something wrong with you if you have fill in the blank, but not necessarily. There are people who have autism where it's absolutely debilitating and separates them from the world, and other people who have different forms of it where they call it their superpower. And so you should have a choice, really, if this is something you want to address or that needs to address. But it adds to the stigma of it all, I think, when you have someone out there in the political realm saying, we need to prevent this from happening to anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, if he was even using the word prevention, then that would be fantastic. I think the scientists have been working on that for a long time. And the fact that he's using the word cure, how are you going to cure anything by October? It seems like just a blatant lie. I mean, if you look at the Cult Education Institute, I mean, they say specifically that unreasonable fears about the outside world. I mean, that's one of the hallmarks of cult-like behavior.
Yeah, and I think that's how they keep people in for such a long time, by making them afraid. And then people will sometimes say, the reason that I stayed was because I really felt trapped. They had made the outside world such a horrific and scary, dangerous place in my mind that I had to stay here, even though I wasn't so convinced that here was so good for me as well. And so people feel like they don't have a choice. It has been a pleasure and illuminating and really interesting to talk to you. And where can people find you and your book and other things that you've worked on or are working on?
So you can find me at haleykrischer.net. You could also find my book at independent bookstores or at the library. You can ask your local library to carry it. If your local independent bookstore doesn't carry the book, you can ask them if they could carry it. And you can also buy it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, any of the big booksellers out there as well. And I'm also on Instagram at Haley Krischer on Instagram.
Okay, Haley Krischer. Wonderful. Good. Haley, it was a treat, really. It was so good to have you on. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. It was so much fun to delve into all this psychological cult stuff. It's my jam.
Right? Mine too.
And I know it's your jam too.
Yes, right. We'll jam away. Hopefully another time we can talk some more. One more thing before you go. It is so important to hear from people like Haley, who can talk about her own experience with really getting into this kind of research, finding out about this wellness whole community, whole subculture, and the dangers involved, and how much it impacts relationships. And not only interpersonal relationships, but how it impacts, I think, a relationship with yourself. If you feel like you need so much help, if you feel like you need to find the next product that's going to make you look the way you want to look, or is going to make you somehow feel like you fit in, or is going to take care of something that you've always had an insecurity about, or that society has given you an insecurity about. There are so many fast answers, so many miracle cures, so many things available online, so many things that advertisers are very good at making us feel are necessary to include in our daily regimen, in our lives, and that in addition to that, somehow we should feel lucky that we came across this advertisement or this commercial or that person who looks so fill in the blank, beautiful, fit, whatever it is. And that's the way we want to look. What happens too is that some people don't know that's the way they want to look or that's the way they want to feel or that's the way they're supposed to look or that's the way they're supposed to feel until they see these commercials, until they see these ads, without knowing that or remembering that advertising is set up to create a need and then to fulfill it. So it can convince you that you don't have enough of something. It can convince you that you have something that's faulty. It can convince you that it has the answer to the source of the question you have, which is, why is my life not better or happier? Or why am I still single? Or why do I not have a more successful career or whatever else? Well, I need this kind of enzyme, or I need this kind of vitamin, or I need this kind of exercise, or really fill in the blank with whatever it is that they're providing for you. What's also true is that with so many of these advertisements, we have no idea how many of them are based in science, how many of them are based in truth or not. The words usually used to describe the things that people are told to buy have nothing to do with words that we would understand or that we would know how to define. If someone tells you to buy something because it's going to help your body feel good, you might think, okay, sure, that might sound good. But if somebody says, we have an enzyme that affects your body in a way nothing else can, in fact, it does healing on a cellular level, then you might think, aha, this is the thing I need to buy. Do you know what that even means? Do you know what that looks like? Do you know if that's necessary? Those questions are often not asked, but if someone can seem scientific and the words can seem scientific, then it feels valid. Then it feels true. I know I give the example sometimes of someone in a commercial who's wearing a lab coat. And so it seems like they're a doctor, but they're just someone who was handed a lab coat before they went on camera. And so you want to know if anything has relevance to your life, if it really is necessary, if it really is a find. But also know that sometimes the wellness industry is just very good at keeping itself well and not necessarily keeping you all that well. When we talk about wellness too, we talk about fear getting stirred up. And this is something that Haley talked about. When you can get people to feel huge emotions like rage, like awe, or like fear, panic, you're going to miss this opportunity. This is the only time this is going to be available. If you reach a certain age and you haven't started taking this thing yet or doing this exercise yet or looking like this yet, then it's going to be too late. There's so much that gets stirred up inside of people to make them think that something is necessary. But notice when you're reading an article or when you're watching a video, if you suddenly feel this kind of overarching sense of fearfulness, you're going to be giving up this once in a lifetime chance, or your body is going to be suffering if it doesn't fill in the blank, take that thing, do that thing, buy that thing. Notice the emotions that are getting stirred up inside of you. And before you go to that seminar, before you buy into that product, either on your own or through some sort of multi-level marketing scheme, do your research. Don't let your emotions, your reactions guide you to make a decision. Remember that they were stirred up and maybe there is a reason for it. Maybe there is something about it that really is true. But before you react on that impulse, then you want to take action first. And action is different than reaction. They're hoping that you'll have a reaction. So you'll want to then buy this product so you no longer feel that fear. So you no longer feel whatever it was that got stirred up inside of you. But taking action means sometimes sidestepping and saying, okay, I'm going to hold that thought, hold that emotion. Let me do my research. Let me see about this study they're citing. Let me see if it's true. Let me see who funded that study. Let me see if I don't recognize the name of that organization. Is that organization valid? Is that a front name for a different organization? Find out. Get the facts. Because you want to be a smart consumer. And you don't want to feel like you were snowed. We all are snowed. We all are convinced of things that we think are true. We all are convinced that we need some certain things that we don't actually need. So we want to make sure that we're not getting drawn into something that actually is going to do nothing at best, but maybe cause harm at worst. Do your research, look it up, talk to people, find out before you hit a purchase button, before you buy in to multi-level marketing, before you put yourself at risk. Take good care. Talk to you next week.
Thank you very much for listening. Please support Indoctrination on Patreon at patreon.com/indoctrination. Be sure to give us a follow on our social media. Find us on Facebook and Instagram using @indoctrinationpodcast. And for Twitter, find us @_indoctrination. We love hearing from you too. So send us an email at indoctrinationshow@gmail.com. And for more updates on the show, visit our website at www.podpage.com/indoctrination.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.